This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for part two of the defensive review of that 24-0 slam basting of the Bengals on Sunday. A happy day, certainly. Joining me to talk about that is Jim Zipko. Jim, how you doing?
Great, Ken. Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
Always a pleasure. How do you think I'm doing after a 24-0 win yesterday? And I spent basically all my time since then studying this defense. It's been a lot of fun. We talked about a lot of things in the first episode I thought were good. Where do the Ravens go with here from here with their inside linebacker situation? You know, they'll need to go to the street and get somebody for starters. They're going to rely on Trenton Simpson. By the way, when somebody asks him, how do you feel about, you know, your backup alternatives at the position? There's nothing for him to say, but that he's thrilled with this plan. It's kind of like Bill Murray.
Talk about Harbaugh.
Bill Murray at the end of the first Ghostbusters movie where, you know, somebody said we could try and cross the streams, and he says, I love this plan.
I'm excited about this idea.
I'm excited to be a part of this plan.
Yeah, it's his job to create that kind of excitement. Oh, we have great players behind him, and you know, we're excited about the players that we have, and we're looking forward to seeing what they can do for us. And, I mean, you can write it yourself.
Yeah.
Steve Bisciotti really called it his relentless positivity. And honestly, it's one of his strengths as a coach. As annoying as it sometimes is.
I mean, I don't know what some fans want in terms of Harbaugh being honest with us at press conferences. First of all, if he could be honest about something, he probably shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. So two things. One, the first one, it should be obvious to everybody. He should never give us any information about injuries. That stuff is private as hell. Just your only answer is no comment. That's the simple way. And Harbaugh, because he's such a nice guy, because he wants people to like him, it's actually a weakness of his that he wants to go and tell people more than he should, at least when it's good news. And then people know when it's bad news, all he does is say nothing.
He needs to go full Belichick.
And anybody who's worked in a capacity where you have to be careful about insider trading tips, mm-hmm. knows exactly that you can't give out information like that. So anyway, that's one thing. The other thing is like bashing a player who's playing for you now, and you need to play a key role. Look, does anybody really think at this point that Daniel Falele is somebody the Ravens want to have in 2026? Probably not. I mean, you know, maybe there's some people out there who are Ravens fans who are still right player, right price. I could believe it. Bringing back as a backup, maybe it would make some sense. But I'm not excited about the prospect, and I don't think Harbaugh would be either. And I don't think he's, you know, if he had truth serum and he says, well, look, at the most, we'd have some limited role for him, and it'd only be willing if he's willing to come back at the vet minimum kind of thing. But the truth of the matter is, there's a bunch of teams that have worse guards in the league and are going to be willing to pay him. But there's no point in Harbaugh saying anything bad about the player. It doesn't help the cause in any way.
So what is he? He disillusions the player, you know, like he maybe gets a worse effort out of him because he feels the coach doesn't have his back. Yeah. And in the meantime, like Harbaugh has probably been breaking down game film of offensive line play since he was like 9 years old, right? Like it's not like he doesn't know.
He's a football lifer.
Yeah. In the most literal sense of the term.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the Alomar family was thought to be one in baseball that was just filled with people who've been around baseball their whole life, because Sandy Alomar Sr. Right. had been around for a long time, and his kids could actually play, Sandy Alomar Jr. and Roberto, and then they were around baseball their whole lives. So it's just people who like that, they just have a different level of understanding of the game. So you got
to. Well, so people feel like they're being lied to, right? Like Harbaugh says to them, no, I mean, we saw some good plays, and obviously there's a couple plays he'd like to have back, but I saw a good effort from him. And, you know, of course that's what he's going to say, but people feel lied to.
Yeah. Well, stop expecting the truth from somebody who's absolutely incented to do the opposite. There's a bigger effort there. Even if Daniel Falele was the only problem, and sometimes this is a player who has a piss poor attitude. Tim Williams was this way. You know, he's had enough of him, and he lets you know with the saltiness of his comments. Ben Cleveland, I think in a lot of ways, he's been very salty with his lack of willingness to say positive things. And there's been dozens and dozens of questions over years about why isn't Ben Cleveland in there at right guard?
Right.
You know, he's had more and more salty things to say. He's gotten saltier about that particular topic. Now Ben Cleveland's suspended by the league. It's not even an option. So, you have that. But, you know, it's not just a matter of Daniel Falele in this case and him bad-mouthing him and it not doing any good. It's a matter of the next guy that they get, the next veteran who wants to sign here. You know, yeah. What about C.J. Gardner-Johnson if he's bashed him, or Deontay Johnson, who really deserved it? You know, and he deserved to have the crap bashed out of him for what he pulled with the Ravens. And yet Harbaugh never really did it. You know, it's a we wish him the best. You know, go to your next opportunity. You know, I got nothing bad to say about the guy.
As a policy, that's just absolutely the way you have to operate in a free agent league. You know, in a league where word of mouth matters, you know, where players' opinions of your team and the environment and the culture matter. You know, this is exactly what he should be doing. And it's frustrating as a fan to listen to, like, because you feel like this guy's being glazed and he's playing terribly, but you can't be in the position of routinely throwing guys under the bus in Harbaugh's position. It's just not the way to play it.
Yeah, completely agree. So I'm fine with his communication style. I mean, the weakness he had is the weakness that nobody talks about, is the weakness that he gives asymmetric injury information. He just should shut his mouth when it comes to injury questions. It's just really that simple.
Every coach faces. So Belichick was an outlier, right? Because every coach, I feel like every coach or most coaches answer injury questions to some extent or another.
I think, you know, the Harbaugh tries to be a model in this regard, but he's only somewhat to the right of center in terms of not giving away injury information. I think there's coaches who do it much better. And you know, Belichick would be the far right in terms of I'm not telling you anything. You go fuck yourself if you're
right. Exactly.
It. Yeah.
All right. We'll have that update out later in the week when we're supposed to. Next question, please.
Yeah. Any questions about the Bengals? We're playing the Bengals next. Oh, we're not playing the Bengals next. Whoever we're playing next. Any questions about them? Yeah.
I love that even in our defensive show, we cannot stay away from Daniel Fa'alele like forever. Like he still dominates a few minutes of discourse. Yeah,
I mean, it's a waste of time, honestly. And I, you know, he hasn't been as bad as everybody says. He's probably a 25th. Now he's dropped down. He got another bad grade this week, but he's still not at the bottom of leagues. And this Miami team that's playing tonight that I'm watching in an abortion of a game versus the Steelers. They have two guards who are both worse than Daniel Fa'alele, like Cole Strange and Josh Sabatinaia. And it's unholy to watch, to watch that happen. But the Dolphins would love to have Daniel Fa'alele probably, or they'd love to have somebody else.
Drain another couple of minutes out of this, what do you think of the guy they acquired off of the ex-Texan that they picked up the other day?
Not Kenyon Green. You're not talking about him. You're talking about the newer guy. You're gonna have to remind me of who that is. He's a guy who's signed to the practice squad.
Yeah,
look it up. We'll come back to it. I want to go to individual player stuff, so we're not completely behind on this. So, who'd you like to talk about first?
I'd like to talk about Mike Green. So I was hugely positive on the drafting of Mike Green, and you know I thought that he was going to be like a real difference maker for this defense. And so the good side, he leads the team in sacks. The bad side, with only 3.5. The sack that he got in this game, you called it a motor sack in our pregame. That's kind of like the type of player that he was. Yeah, that was one of his attributes, that kind of relentless pass rush ability. So it's nice to see him. I don't know. I'm embarrassed that 3.5 leads the team, but it's still my guy. He's leading the team, so I'm going to talk him up.
Okay, well, I'm cool with that. I think he's probably now, with the current set out by outside linebackers they have, I don't know if they'll continue to activate five on a weekly basis, but there's a pretty good chance that he'll get to take more pass rush opportunities with Tavius Robinson on the field for more snaps in total. It's just whether or not they activate Ajabo for any more games, Tavius takes a higher chunk of total snaps and a higher chunk of first down snaps. and that'll allow Green to play more pass rush snaps. I just think it's going to be much closer to optimal in terms of his development if that's what he's working on, instead of it's all about his edge setting, or it's as much about his edge setting as it is about his pass rush. And that's got to drain him in terms of diverting his efforts in multiple ways. But timing,
so you're saying that you're saying that run defense will become a slightly smaller percentage of his responsibilities as Tavius keeps playing. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll move on. I'll talk about, well, we got to talk about Travis Jones, who had a fantastic game in this game. He had good pressure all game. He had three total events, two pressures and a sack minus five. He had three tackle contributions. They were all defensive wins. He wasn't getting moved on the point of attack the way some of the other guys were, so I don't have a bunch of negative run notes. By the way, there aren't too many negative run notes, period, for this defense, because we make notes on who blocked whom on each play where the offense gets a 6 or more yards on the play. It's not always a success on the play, but if they get 6 or more yards, then I take notes on how the blocks worked out. And there aren't any notes on Travis Jones like that are bad in this game. And he's it's a great celebration sack for the new contract. And I hope Travis is happy right now with his deal. I mean, it's a really unfortunate circumstance that maybe his agent put him into or whatever, but he wasn't going to be a UFA this offseason.
It's the Rashad Bateman circumstance, right?
Same circumstance, supposedly.
So just for listeners, but Bateman 1 year failed to accrue a season of service after year because he wasn't, what, he didn't report on the first day or something like that.
Didn't report it 2 days late or something, and so he didn't accrue the year of service. And I don't know whether that's something that the Ravens would have to wave away, but in the case of Bateman, they told him, hey, look, we want to negotiate in good faith or whatever. I'm guessing. This is my conjecture as to how this played out. We want to negotiate in good faith and whatnot, and we want to give you a contract that you're happy with, but in truth, you're only going to be an RFA this year. So let's try and hammer out a deal that makes sense for both of us. And what it does is it creates a divisible benefit situation where the player probably ends up taking a little bit less money. The Ravens, I think, would have loved to have Travis Jones for 4 years at this price.
What is a divisible benefit situation?
Okay, so a divisible benefit, it comes up most often in tax situations where there may be deductibility of some component that reduces tax, but oftentimes it also comes up in negotiations a good example is in war, it comes up. So if there's a cost to conducting a war for either side, and they can come to an agreement on the expected outcome has some difference also if the war is going to be conducted, then they can come to an agreement on a split of territory if that's the objective in the thing. Could be trade agreements, could be a lot of things in this day and age, but in the Ukraine it's territory, and they can come to an agreement on that because neither side really wants to continue to fight the war and it's a better deal for them to end it. So but it comes up,
even the side that perceives itself as most likely to win, it is worth it to concede something because there is
some
a
part
cost
of their expected win because there is a cost of the gathering cost.
Yep, I exactly. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
So Travis Jones, he was 1 year further away from free agency than maybe he expected because he failed to garner a year of service. And so that gave the Ravens kind of an edge in negotiations. And so that's the divisible benefit. It was worth it to them to give something.
Right. Because the other choice in this would have been Travis Jones could have been signed for about $5.5 million, something like that, to a second round tender, which would have made him toxic, I think, to any other team. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's some team willing to trade a second round because he's certainly that sort of talent that they would have traded a second round pick and still signed Jones to a big contract. But that would have been hanging over any negotiations with any other team is we're not going to trade a second round pick and sign him to a huge contract because teams don't want to do that. But Travis Jones is a great player. And I'm so thoroughly happy he's a Raven. My next jersey will be a Travis Jones jersey. And I feel kind of stupid doing it because he wears the same number as Brandon Williams, who I already have a jersey of.
What another great player.
Yeah. But anyway, he'll be certainly one of my favorites, I'm sure, as long as he's here. And great deal, I think, for both sides. And Travis Jones has nobody but his agent probably to blame for the way this rolled out.
I think that's a huge, that signing, that extension is a huge win for the Ravens.
Huge win. Huge, enormous. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they went into that the negotiations of this saying, okay, well, your next year is going to be at $5.5 million or whatever it is for the second round tender. And then those next 2 years, we might say would be $20 million. So that'd be 45. We're going to discount it, but we're going to give you all your money now. So instead, you don't have the injury risk next year, blah, 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 blah. So we'll give you $40 million instead of 45. And that's where.
But we'll give it to you now. So time value of money is in your favor. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, what if you look at Eric DaCosta's to-do items going into the next offseason, that was huge.
That was number one. Yeah.
Yeah. And he took care of it now. So that's great.
And Linderbaum has played a little bit better in recent weeks. And I haven't been as positive on his pass blocking as PFF has, mm-hmm. but he's definitely improved as a pass blocker. No doubt about it. In the last 6 to 8 weeks, I'm up to a point. I mean, you got to take every new data point as it comes in. I'm up to a point where I'd pay him 17 to 17 and a half million per year at this point,
really,
which is still short of the Humphrey amount, but it's a lot higher than where I was. And so I think if the Ravens want to make an investment in their line, I'd be okay doing it at this point. But I still wouldn't let him reset the market. I don't think that's appropriate, you know, given where he stands among the centers in terms of pass blocking as a whole, but he's improved these last 6 or 7 weeks or so, which has been good.
He supposedly is one of those guys, one of those locker room guys, one of those character guys, you know, one of those high value teammate guys. So, you know, maybe.
All right, your turn.
Marlon Humphrey, who is not what he was and is not a shutdown corner anymore, but he plays with physicality. He plays through injuries. He makes plays. You highlighted in the first half, the play in the end zone where he undercut the receiver mm-hmm. and forced a high throw. Obviously the interception, he's there and he shows up for the Ravens. He's one of the most high effort players, I think, on the defense. He's a talker, right? And he's got his podcast and he's got, you know, personality, and he rubs a lot of Ravens fans the wrong way. But I think you'd be hard pressed to find a more competitive Raven who shows up week after week than Marlon.
I mean, that's where I am. And I think the only thing I'd say about it is that I think it's probably time for him to move to safety. He's given up 9 yards a target this year. So that for starters is not good. I think it's time to move to safety. I think but the Ravens will probably approach him about it this offseason. The time seems right because they've got a $7.3 million savings for cutting him. I think you probably, whereas in most years, I'd say there's no way you can get somebody as good as Marlon Humphrey at corner for $7.3 million. I think you talk to Marlon Humphrey this year because you can get somebody better. Mm-hmm. For $7.3 million, and you know they just had a great bargain on Awuzie. So I'm not saying they can replicate that every year. Or Ronald Darby for the 1 year they had him was very good.
He was great.
Yeah, but they I do think they can get somebody better than Marlon Humphrey for $7.3 million. So if he's gonna continue, it probably won't be on exactly that number. It'll be a slight reduction in pay for this next season, and it probably be maybe a 2 year deal, maybe a 3 year deal, where he's moving to safety as part of this. And I think it makes a lot of sense. I think with Gilman probably departing, I think Humphrey might be both the better and approximately the same cost choice. Mm. So I think it would be a good thing. And I think for Marlon, assures his place in the Ravens' ring of honor.
Yeah.
You know, with certainly with one more deal. I think probably he's already there now, but he's awfully close. Ronnie Stanley certainly assured his place with this last contract with the Ravens.
One thing I want to say about Humphrey's yards per target against figures is that I think that there's, I remember noticing in their game against the Chiefs way back, you know, earlier this season, that I thought that I saw on consecutive plays, Marlon almost running with Xavier Worthy. And on the next play, Marlowe almost covering Travis Kelce. Now, both those plays, the receiver caught the ball and made a big game. So I'm talking about two players where Marlon got beat bad, right? Or got beat rather. So statistically, those are terrible, but it's rare to have a player, and obviously he was healthier earlier in the mm-hmm. season than he is now, but it's rare to have a player who can almost run with Xavier Worthy and is almost physical enough to match up with Travis Kelce. I feel like his high yards per target against on the season is a little bit of feature of overuse. You know, the Ravens kind of deploying him in matchups where they didn't have anybody else necessarily. So I'm taking it with a little bit of a grain of salt, I guess I'm saying.
I mean, I think it's, if I had to point to something, the thing I would say is the legitimate thing is the injuries.
Yeah.
So if he was, if that has really reduced his play, which I'm not 100% sure it's not just in some natural element of natural decline underlies mm-hmm. everything we've got here.
Yeah.
That if it was mostly injuries, then, and I could believe it was transient, I'd be very positive on his move to safety. I can't be positive anymore about his staying at corner. I can't do it. Yeah. I did have a good game, by the way, against the Steelers in terms of what he did. And this is strange, but Maureen comes to me every day and she manages like social media for the podcast now. And okay. So she's out there posting on things on Instagram and something TikTok. What's the other one? Instagram and YouTube she uses for YouTube, videos okay. now. So she's putting these short videos that I'm doing out there. And she said there was an award given to me that she presumes is from Marlon Humphrey for being a fan of Marlon Humphrey. I got to look at the thing. I didn't take a look yet, but I appreciate you, Marlo. And I hope you've got three more years at least at safety for the Ravens, because I'm really excited to see those portable skills that I see. Punching the ball out as a second man to the ball, as the first man to the ball, and being able to use those off-man coverage skills, I think extremely portable to safety, and I think it'd be very good there. All right, my turn, right?
Yes.
Let's go with Roquan Smith. Terrific game in this one. 7 defensive wins among 14 tackle contributions. He's came off a game against Pittsburgh. We had 8 out of 10, so tons of defensive wins, epitomized by the 4th-and-1 stop where he jumped right into the hole created by John Jenkins. Great play by Jenkins, but Smith jumped right into that hole and nobody was getting through it. And he took him down, got the Ravens the ball back, finished that Bengals drive, and finished the shutout, frankly, on that play. He had a contribution to 4 drive-ending plays in this game. Really good coverage of Gesicki. I don't know how to pronounce this. Gesicki.
It's a hard G, isn't it?
Yeah,
Gesicki,
yeah. I think it is, yeah. Down the left hash, pretty much, when they had double coverage. They had a nice inside-outside bracket on that play, and the ball went right off Gesicki's fingertip. But it was a play where Roquan had a big hand on it. Whoever was doing the game, was it? I don't
know. Adam Archuleta was the color commentator.
Adam Archuleta?
Yeah.
Okay, well, he was praising, like, crazy the ability of Roquan to be underneath on one of the balls that was tipped, I think, for the Humphrey interception. I think it was that one. It seemed almost overpraise in that case, but I trust him on this. He said, really good positioning there from Roquan. He took the window away from him. The ball, came in somewhat high and outside, and Smith got a hand on the ball, and then it got picked off by Humphrey.
I wonder if Archuleta was – so Archuleta played safety for many, many years. Yeah. So he knows what he's looking at in terms of coverage, but he also – maybe he was overpraising on that play to kind of make up for, Roquan's having a great game, and I haven't spoken his name enough up till now.
Maybe. I mean, I think Roquan's coverage abilities are dramatically undervalued. Dramatically so. And the primary thing about this is the what I'll call CJ Mosley syndrome, is that you assume a guy can't cover when he's by far the better of 2 coverage choices you have at inside linebacker. So he's forced into a disproportionate number of disadvantaged situations because he's the best you got. So is Trenton Simpson a reasonable alternative? Well, not at this point. Was Patrick Queen ever? No. You'd rather have Roquan dragging the seam and trying to make a tight window for a quarterback, even though it looks like then he's getting beaten and PFF is assigning the target to him because it's between level 2 and 3. Yeah. It ends up being a very difficult situation for him, but I believe he is dramatically undervalued as a coverage player.
So 2 things I want to say about that. So the first thing is that I read somewhere, and this is the internet, right? So it could be 100% vapor or bullshit. Okay. But I read somewhere last offseason that the linebacker coach with the team last year, in the prior offseason, talked to Roquan and told him that he needed to come in to camp a little heavier so he could play a little more physical. Huh. And that took like a half step away from his speed. And Roquan was playing slow for like the first third or so of the season, but he lost weight as the season went on and got faster. And they cut that linebacker coach and have a new guy, and Roquan's playing fast again. So I heard that, and I would like to believe it because it paints a picture of a player who didn't report out of shape, but actually was taking coaching and, maybe misguided coaching.
Okay, I want to look it up, like what his yards per target are for the year. Let's see if I have that here. So this uses the PFF targets, which if you know, are tremendously difficult on inside linebackers. Mm. But he's given up 396 yards in 56 targets, which is not seven per, right? Oh, no, maybe it is. 396 over 56, right? It's about that. 7.1 yards per target. So
that's good. That's lower than the league average.
That is probably lower than the league. Yeah. Oh, you're saying in terms of yards per target. Yeah, you would know.
Yes, it is.
You would know. And I don't know if it's lower than the league average in inside linebacker, because inside linebacker has a lot of downhill play involved. So yeah, some of his ability to deny yards after contact, which is very good, is rolled into that low yards per target number.
So it's very close to the league-wide yards per target figure for tight ends, and it's higher than the league-wide yards per target figure for running backs.
Okay.
It's much lower than the league high yards for the league average yards per target figure for wide receivers.
What's for wide receivers, the yards per target on average?
I'd have to look it up. It's something like 8.5, and tight ends is close to 7, and running backs is around 5. And I would have to take some time to look it up to tell you more precisely than that. But those are ballparks.
Okay. So that means the yards per target across the lead is something like 7. That takes out the sacks and a lot of the throwaways, mm-hmm. depending on where you're getting your targets from. If you're getting your targets from PFR, for example, you would
totally.
Okay.
Free sources, baby. Oh, so the second thing I wanted to say about Roquan is that I feel like the inside linebacker position is devalued as a pass defense position. Mm-hmm. But so much pass offense happens in the short middle of the field. If your middle linebacker, if your inside linebackers can't cover, your tight ends are eating your lunch, running backs sneaking out of the backfield. I mean, like, this is a ton of offense happens right there where the inside linebacker plays.
Yeah, you can't hide that guy. If you're going to play a committed nickel scheme, which is the Ravens play, not a committed nickel, but they do play a nickel on first and second down most of the time, then you're only getting a third of the time you have Kyle Hamilton in that spot. And the rest of the time you always have Roquan, but you could ask Roquan to be a pass rusher on a play. But Roquan will always have some responsibility in coverage. And the only time you get a better coverage player next to him is when you have Kyle Hamilton there.
Yeah. And coverage was, thinking back to Ray Lewis, coverage was an underrated part of Ray Lewis's game. He was so freaking fast and had such amazing anticipation.
So he went through stages. He went through an evolution in his career, but he became a guy who didn't have the speed anymore and who had to get in the lane, but he was expert at that. He understood eyes in the back of his head in terms of knowing where he needed to be in the lane, could read the quarterback very effectively. And then we saw him. I know there's a mythology which goes with Ray Lewis about his run in the 2012 playoffs. He's an awful player in 2012.
Yeah. It's
just very simple.
He was over.
He was at the end of his career. It was over. And in the playoffs, he racked up a lot of tackles, but he racked up a lot of tackles because they were picking on him just constantly. They ran at him. They threw at him. They did whatever they could because it was one of the weakest points in the Ravens defense. And he almost lost the Super Bowl for them by getting beat on crossers by Vernon Davis, right? Was the guy for the 49ers?
Yeah, that was Vernon Davis. Yeah.
So it's something that I look at the end of Ray Lewis there, and the thing I'll remember are the three plays on 2nd and 5, 3rd and 5, 4th and 5 that they got the stop at near the goal line on the 49ers. He had a key element in both in all three of those plays that was more related to his intellect on the field than anything else. He didn't get fooled by a complete clear out play. He knew to get back into a spot where the clear out was wet and take a pass away that could have gone to Frank Gore. And he let Jimmy Smith make the decision. Then Ayupati, I think, was the left guard for the 49ers in that game. He jumped into the left A gap and had Ayupati jump in after him while Suggs took the left tackle, and Danelle Ellerby came in from level 2 for the game winning pressure.
Ellerby. Yeah. There's a name.
So that was Ray Lewis's doing. So he went out like Ted Williams with three plays to win. Actually, better than Ted Williams, because Ted Williams played in a meaningless game in number, and he hit a homer on his last at bat. But Ray Lewis had Super Bowl winning plays on his last three defensive plays.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
that's the kind of insight we tune into, man. Ray Lewis was pretty good. Is it my turn to pick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Draymond Jones. So I'm going to steal a number that you provided me, which is that he had 5 quarterback hits in this game. which I tell me where that ranks in the league this year.
Third highest total in the NFL this season, I am
by
told.
By any player.
Yeah, the Ravens media PR staff came out with this and don't know how to evaluate it exactly. I don't know whether they got it from PFF quarterback hits, which would like subtract sacks, because he had all five were actual quarterback hits as opposed to any being sacks. Mm-hmm. So there might be something like that going on. Or if they got it from PFR, which is would be the more reliable sources because that uses the official quarterback hits, then it's still very impressive. It's
an impactful day. Yeah. He has been such an amazing acquisition for this defense, and I did not expect very much of him when we traded for him. So
yeah, well, he's been terrific. He's been the team's best pass rusher, I would say, since he got here. Here's one interesting thing. He's got a sack and a half right now. If he gets a second sack and the Ravens make the playoffs, that draft pick goes up from a 5 to a 4 that they traded away. The Ravens are highly incented to not let that happen. There's another player who might take a week off in week 17 if he – I don't know what incentives he has in his contract, but the Ravens would be better off saying, hey, you know what? We're going to pay you all those incentives.
Yeah.
You know, he may have $100,000, $150,000 incentives. Difference between a 4 and a 5 is a hell of a lot more than that. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, but I mean, like, I want him to get the sack and I want them to make the playoffs. Like, I don't want to, you know, be penny wise and pound foolish here.
To entertain this sort of things, but sometimes 9 yards is better than 10 on first downs. Like,
yes, of course, yes.
Okay. Of course. So, what number of sacks?
A second and one is huge. You can do anything on that down.
So, we understand with a notional thing we're talking about here. So, what number of sacks would you need from Draymond Jones the rest of the way to make it better than if you got 0?
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code RAVENS. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Rest of the way includes the Super Bowl?
No, regular season only, because that's where the bonus is based on.
I would say 3 or 4.
Okay, 2.5 I'll take.
Right.
So even that, I mean, that's in 3 games. It seems unlikely. And, you know, as soon as he gets that half sack to get the 2 exactly, it's not going to feel good in terms of some things. But anyway, it's actually pretty minor in terms of the general things. But the difference between a 4th and a 5 is more than another 5th round pick. So think about it in terms of that, in terms of what.
Yeah, no, I know that you're right in terms of draft value, but I also feel like this team, you know, if everything comes together, this team could actually make a postseason run.
Oh, sure.
And part of that is Draymond Jones, like, being unleashed to be a beast. And so I would be willing to suffer some opportunity cost in terms of a draft pick, you know, a 4th rounder. I mean, come on, you know, if it might, you know, play a part in unlocking some higher level of play from this defense.
I mean, you said a lot of words there, but it has to actually do that. It has to actually be of that value. And I'm not sure why Draymond Jones saving all of his sacks for the postseason, for lack of a better word, is being less effective during the rest of the regular season and then tremendously effective in the postseason.
Becoming more comfortable in the defense, you know, Tavius Robinson making a positive impact, like understanding the scheme that's much better, chemistry with his teammates.
To the extent that you could sit Draymond Jones in a meaningless Week 17 game, were that to occur, would you?
Yeah. No. He needs 1 more sack?
1 half.
A half sack?
Yeah,
he could get that on Sunday against the Patriots, and it doesn't
mean it's possible, and then he could not get it. And then the question is, do you sit him in a meaningless Week 17 game, have him go to Pittsburgh still a half sack short when you're definitely going to play him, and have that be the thing? And then if you win the game, by the way, if you win the Pittsburgh game because he gets the sack, you're not going to feel bad about it no matter what.
No!
Because that puts you in the playoffs. You're going to feel stupid about it only if you make the playoffs, Draymond's efforts were not needed, and you got the sack in a meaningless component of the schedule. Either up 20 points on the Steelers in the final week of the season, or they get it in Week 17 when the game didn't matter. Either one would be bad. All right. You don't seem...
I think that there's a difference between what the general manager might like to have happen and what the coach needs to do in his interactions with the player. And I don't think that the coach needs the player being as ferocious and as energetic as he can be. And he doesn't need the player thinking that he's going to bench him for contract incentives. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that there's a relationship thing there.
So let's be clear. This is not a contract incentive. This is a third-party payer system where you have the morale hazard of that third party not really being a party to the transaction.
Sure.
It goes beyond stupid, but if he had incentives that need to be paid, well, the Ravens need to just go ahead and pay him whatever incentives
he might
lose from not playing the game. And then he's made a whole. No problem.
But you're talking about what the other team gets in the trade.
What the other team gets, sure. So they're the third party that is not part.
I see the logic, but I am resistant to it just because it seems, I don't know. It seems there's an ethos of the game, right? Like, you play to win the game. I don't know.
I'm going to have trouble going down this path with you. I think Voss would say in a second, you don't do it. Voss is a hardliner in terms of a lot of things.
He is a hardliner.
He's, one thing he says is...
When we were talking about that inside linebacker discussion just a couple minutes ago, Voss was totally front of mind for me.
Okay. We'll piss him off a little bit. The other thing is Voss really believes in not voting for your guys for the Pro Bowl. Now...
What?
That's really extreme. Well, because they'll often get contractual incentives or escalators, worse, because they get Pro Bowl voting.
So it hurts your contract. So it hurts your salary cap.
Yeah, it hurts your salary cap directly. So I say don't vote for anybody who doesn't deserve it. That's where I draw the line. I'm never going to vote for Patrick Queen for Pro Bowl because I never really thought he deserved it. So that would have been one. But am I going to vote for Ronnie Stanley in a good year? Sure. Am I going to vote for Kyle Hamilton every year? Sure. Tyler Lindebaum, when he deserved it, no problem. But in terms of voting for a player who really doesn't deserve it, I'm actually upset with people who suggest or just put up Pro Bowl votes for every single player they can.
Every Raven, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it diminishes the value of the award. Is it my turn to pick a player?
Well, I think we need to move. You want one more? Go ahead. We need to move on to the mailbag pretty quickly.
No, let's go ahead and move on to the mailbag.
Okay. We have a packed mailbag tonight, so we got five to get through. So let's talk a little bit. The first is Dr. Syed, he's contributed a lot of questions lately. We appreciate you, Doctor. Hi, Ken. Great win featuring overall intensity that will be needed to propel us to the season's end. I agree. It seems like Zach Orr made some key adjustments throughout the game, one of them being pulling Hamilton back a little bit from the line of scrimmage. I'm assuming this was at least in part due to the return of Tavius Robinson, but it also seemed to me watching the game like Orr was making a willful decision to dial Hamilton back a little bit. Is this borne out in your film review? Great win. Looking forward to your analysis. Okay, first of all, thanks for all that. I think you're pretty much spot on. What you're seeing, I believe, is package and pass rush related usage of Hamilton. So Hamilton played about a third of his snaps in this game in the dime. So when he's in the dime, he's at weak side linebacker. He's not at slot corner anymore, being that great horizontal defender. He's still a great horizontal defender, but being the horizontal defender totally takes away the strong side of the football field the way it can be. And he's also used, I think it was only three or four times as a pass rusher, might have been three times as a pass rusher in this game, which is less than usual and also is reflected by the fact that the Ravens didn't use a lot of blitzes and they didn't use a lot of fifth, sixth, or seventh. Well, they only used twice. They rushed five the whole game. So, they used some zone blitzes where they got Hamilton in there, but they really didn't use him. So I think your observation is correct. And I think that we may see more of this over the next few weeks. I still believe Hamilton is the ace of trumps you need to move around. And by the way, somebody else called him the ace of spades on TV, one of the announcers. And I'm wondering if they're reading my stuff.
But they're playing a less sophisticated game. They're not playing bridge. They're playing spades. So making the same reference, but they're playing the kids version. I think that what Dr. Syed is referring to is describing is kind of a side effect of the game plan that you talked about in the first episode of, you know, four pass rushers playing, you know, really sound coverage behind it, mixing coverages, deceptive coverages, that kind of thing. So if we're rushing four and getting there, then yeah, I agree that Hamilton will play back more often.
All right, let's go to the second question from Spencer Peterson. From an analytics point of view, would you think about the merits of trade-offs of going for two with a 23-point lead? So the Ravens were up by 23, could have made it 24, could have gone for two and gone for 25 in this game. He says three TDs plus two-point conversions is 24, but 25 is up four scores. The game was effectively put away when the Ravens went up 24-0, but asking more generally. So this is one of these things. Maureen and I get in this discussion. Every once in a while, we'll get a discussion where she'll say something that's like what one of my coworkers would say is a trivial subset of the possible outcomes. Okay, it's basically saying that I don't like TV or something. The place we remember this from is from Pulp Fiction, where he's talking about the Ving Rhames's wife having been on a pilot. And the guy's like, what a pilot, you know, one of the shows to see if they're going to have a TV show.
A pilot episode of a TV show.
And you understand what it means. And he goes, I don't watch TV. And he goes, yes, but you are aware of an invention called television. And so sometimes she says this. And I have to respond with, yes, but you are aware of an invention called television. And this is one of these cases where he's not talking about this game necessarily. He's talking about in general. Spencer, one of the problems I have with this is that the charts don't typically go up that high. So one thing I wanted to look for was, you know, what does the chart actually say is the break-even probability in a 23-point game? And I found they only go up to about 15 points typically. I didn't know that, but I was actually surprised to see it. But it does kind of make sense. You got less to gain or lose from a two-point strategy decision when you're up 20, 23 or 24 or 25 points.
Yeah, that's the problem to have. Let's get up 23 points so we can worry about it like that. Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like the delta is so small at that point. Like, your win probability is pretty high up 23, and it's pretty high up 25, and I don't know that the difference is going to be noticeable. Yeah.
You bring up a great point there. And that's something that I want to see done differently in like the Ben Baldwin bot numbers, because they'll give you a win the go for it probability and a kick it probability, whether it's punt or field goal. And then they'll give you the percentage that it improves your win probability on average, given the, your chance of winning the thing. What I want to see is something different. I want to see the percentage chance of you making the goal divided by the total range of potential outcomes that are there. So the top to bottom range in outcome, let's say, is only 4% because it's late in the game and you know it's 92 or 96 that you win the game, but your chance to win the game is 1.5% better. Well, that's it's a big deal. 1.5/4 is a big advantage, but if it's 1.5, it's going to say something about it's a marginal go for it situation. Yeah. So I that's where I'd like to see a different calibration of that Ben Baldwin bot.
You should text him. You should, I mean, ping him on Twitter. Tweet him. I'm sorry. That's the word.
All right. Ready for the third question here?
I am.
Tony Petrocelli. Petrocelli. Not sure. It's Rico Petrocelli. This is Petru's. Might be Petrocelli. So anyway, apologize if I'm spelling it wrong. I'm sure you'll tweet me back. Do you think the Ravens would actually rest their starters if the week 17 scenario occurs?
Well,
I'm yes, you're no, I think, right?
Yes, I am. I am currently no, but if the situation arises, you know, ask me again next week.
All right. I think that
the mantra is stack the wins, right? I just don't see it.
Even the ones that don't matter. Because the Ravens have had plenty of Week 18 games where they've sat Lamar in the past.
Yeah, I don't know why a Week 17 game feels right. Mind you, I'm not saying this is mathematically well-founded, but a Week 17 game feels different to me from a Week 18 game. But that doesn't make any sense, right? Because a Week 18 game and a Week 19 game with a playoff game the following week, like, what the hell am I talking about? I don't know.
Yeah. So week 18 is the start of a five-week playoffs for the Ravens, effectively.
Yeah.
You want to be as healthy as possible for the start of the playoffs, right?
God damn it, you're convincing me.
Okay.
I'm not happy about it though. It doesn't seem right. Like you gotta, like, especially like you're in a race to the division title, and the idea that the game could not matter, it's messing with my mind. Okay. Now, if the Ravens were to lose to the Patriots, well. No, because we would need to be within a game either way heading into the final.
If they lose to the Patriots, then they would need the Steelers to lose each of the next two games, and I can tell you right now, ain't happening tonight against the Steelers. So
it's the Dolphins.
The Dolphins are not getting it done. So it's gonna be a tough road any way we look at it for the Ravens to get through to a Week 18, even having the chance.
So this season has been such a tire spinning in the mud season that I lean towards they need every opportunity they can get to build offensive chemistry and rhythm and to get things working. You know, Lamar's missed a lot of practices, but if Lamar tweaks something this week, then Jesus, I don't know, Ken.
Okay, Lamar's missed a lot of practices is all I need to hear, and then I think I've won. Let's move on. 410 Sports Jam says, was the defensive performance a function of better performance than the Ravens players and coaching staff, or more a function of an unmotivated and distracted Bengals offense? I don't want to be negative person, but the Bengals have a history of seemingly scoring with ease against the Ravens when they are motivated. Do you happen to have a motivation rating for the Bengals from every past game you could look up for me so we could see if he's correct?
So yeah, I'm in that boat too, because one, I hesitate to impugn motivatedness to a team, and two, the Bengals were facing playoff elimination. You know, it was not like a meaningless game for them, and they had just beaten the Ravens, so they had every reason to feel that they could beat the Ravens again. So I'm more inclined to feel that maybe, you know, the cold affected them and their offensive line maybe wasn't good or something like that, then I would be inclined to feel that they were lacking motivation going into that game.
Were they lacking motivation perhaps because the Bengals didn't clean off the seats of the snow that they were supposed to
be? Well, that could be, yeah. The fan apathy kind of drifted down from the stands to the players. No, I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't buy it either. And I saw some video somebody taken from the press box. They're obviously inside a glass area and they're taking pictures of the stands, which are sparsely occupied to start with. There's no the stadium is probably half empty to start the game. But after the interception return for the touchdown put the Ravens up 24-0, he's watching all of the Bengals fans. There's video of him watching all the Bengals fans leave. I presume they weren't Ravens fans leaving at that point.
No.
You never know. You know, you still have something on the line. I'm not buying the motivation thing, so I appreciate the question. I think this is a case where the Ravens did have really an outstanding plan to slow down Burrow offensively, and the weather might have played a role, but I don't think motivation played a role. All right. Angelo.
Also, game script got away from them.
Yes, sure. Yeah, and how would you attribute motivation to causing some of the big plays that blew apart? So, yeah. If you look at the biggest three plays of the game, play number one is Tavius Robinson not getting blocked, running right through the B gap for the 15-yard sack. Is that a motivation issue? It's definitely a assignment issue, but I don't know that it's a motivation issue.
The motivation affected the offensive line's preparation so that they were ready for that. So unmotivated O-line didn't care to block correctly.
You are the cable layer of cable layers if you really want to try and or maybe a cable puller is. That's the bad thing in IT, right? You don't want to have people pulling cables in the basement. All right. Term from my youth, so maybe you
okay.
Know. my point is you're going a lot of way to create an argument that
trying to help a brother out. Yeah, we have an emailer asking a question. So
the possibility number two is did Jamar Chase tip that ball to Humphrey because he was unmotivated to catch it? I mean. Jamar Chase, I mean, you saw his game here. He's motivated to catch every ball that's thrown to him. Every ball he's like catching money. I don't think there's even that. I mean, I think he just wants legitimately, like most wide receivers do, to have the ball thrown to him and to catch it. That's what they freaking live for.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's that. And then the last play, who was unmotivated there? Was Joe Burrow unmotivated to accept the contact? That's maybe the one I could believe.
Which one is this? Which play is this?
The Van Noy interception, because he was kind of falling down backwards. They didn't even credit in the game book a quarterback hit to Tavius Robinson on the play, which is ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah.
Because he destroyed him. He ran right over him after the play. But he was kind of going to the ground as he threw the ball. I was like, okay, are you saying that's the lack of motivation? I don't know. And maybe I could buy it. You know, he just had checked out of that game down 17-0. Possibly. But you know, if the coach felt that way, he just pulled Burrow for the next drive.
Yeah.
And he would have put it back out there. So he obviously didn't feel that way. All right, let's move on to the next question here. Angelov 85. Appreciate all your questions, Angelov. Submits one almost every week. Hi, Ken. How'd the defense change once TB went out in the opening kickoff? So he's talking about Buchanan. It wasn't the opening kickoff, right? It was the after the first series. It was on the punt or something. Yeah. You got hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you like the idea of Trenton Simpson replacing him, or are you looking for a number of packages/substitutions to mitigate his absence? Also, how do we match up against New England defensively?
So I love this question because he wrote the script for us for like a big section of part one. So that's great.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about during the packages. One of the things we said is that they really were seemed to be hesitant to have the Simpson on the field on second and medium, or second and seven or eight, where they would normally have normal nickel. They'd be playing a big nickel is the version the Ravens play. They would have had that on the field normally, but they didn't. They went to dime in a lot of the situations earlier than they have for the rest of the season with Buchanan. So they may have already made that choice. In terms of what they're doing. And they definitely have to get another linebacker.
These are good questions.
These are excellent, aren't they? All right. By the way, use hashtag film study mailbag if you want to get your question on the show. If you don't mind whether I do it on a short or the show, I might do it on either. But if you want it on the show for me to talk it over with somebody specific, and a lot of people want like roster decisions talk between me and Voss. But if you want it on the offensive show, the defensive show, or an individual pod, I'm happy to do it on any of those if you specify for me. If we talk about one more thing before we get on to the MVPs of this game, which we can finish with, and that's where do the Ravens go from here? What is it important for them to take from this win over Cincinnati and make sure that it's portable in at home against New England, on the road in Green Bay, and at Pittsburgh.
Can I have an offense and answer and a defense answer? On offense, some of the same commitment to running the ball and mixing it up between Derrick Henry and Keaton Mitchell. I don't think that Derrick Henry is the every down slammer that he has been for most of his career, but, you know, like maybe 2/3 of the carries. I think you still need to change a pace back. And on defense, the getting pressure with four, like keeping that up, you know, that and obviously the well, that's it. Those are my things.
It's getting pressure with four. If you could will that to happen for any team, it's about the biggest thing you can do defensively to win. And the great defenses of all time, they typically had a great four-man pass rush that was at the heart of what they did. We grew up with the Colts in the mid-70s in the Jones era, and they had the sack back. And the Vikings had the purple people eaters, and the Rams had the fearsome foursome. Doomsday Dallas defense, and the Steelers had the steel curtain, and the great teams in that era all had a bunch of great pass rushers that could get it done with four.
Yeah. Well, so I don't anticipate that kind of production, but even average, you know, amount of pressure from the four, I think would be a step up from what they've had for most of the year.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it would definitely be. And what they did in this game was imperfect, as we talked about from a pressure perspective. But I think they're going to be facing some quarterbacks who are going to understand how to pick apart a defense that relies too heavily on scheme. They're certainly facing some better quarterbacks. May and Love are both a little bit younger than some of the really experienced quarterbacks like Rodgers or Josh Allen that they might face in the playoffs. I think it's definitely a consideration is trying to figure out where is the optimal rush point. And boy, it seems to be working pretty well with four right now.
Yeah. You can't do the same thing every down because they'll kill you, but like predominantly four, or maybe even deceptively four, like which four are coming, like either way.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that, by the way. And you know, if the zone blitzes that the Ravens had been quite effective. Sometimes you end up with a player in level two who can't help you that much. Like Travis Jones drops to the middle and
Michael Pierce had the Michael great Pierce. Interception of all time. Those players are great in space.
All right. So the Ravens, they open -2.5 versus the Patriots on Sunday night.
Seem optimistic. Reasonable? No, I think that it's a lot of baked in credit for who the Ravens have been in previous years and who the Patriots have been in recent years and what the Patriots' strength of schedule look like, but it's certainly not reasonable from like a DVOA standpoint.
Yeah, how good are the Patriots at DVOA? I haven't been looking at it this
year. I think they're the number one or number two team. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe they've, you know what? I think that's not right. Let me look them up.
They have a good point differential, I know, but they played a really weak schedule, is my recollection. Yeah. So that would DVOA would penalize them there.
Well, all right. Second, I'm almost there.
He's almost there. We'll take just a moment. I can stretch out my back a little bit.
There we go. Good Lord. Where are they? Well, they're not in the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh my God. They're below the Ravens.
Okay. So right there I kind of had thought they'd been a fraud for most of the year. So they did beat the Bills.
They're 15th in DVOA.
Okay. That's about the same level. And the Ravens are right at about the same level where they won the Super Bowl in 2012. This is a team, if they get in the playoffs, they could certainly be dangerous in a league without a truly great, or a conference without a truly great team.
I mean, this year is very reminiscent of 2012 in terms of offensive struggles and criticism and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The Patriots scare me because I feel like we've seen teams from this coach challenge the Ravens he's brought teams that on paper were less talented than Ravens teams and either beat them or played them to a standstill.
Okay, well, fair enough. I mean, I don't bother like looking at it too much because I just get worried to death no matter what. I'm a natural worrier, but I'll be looking more this week at the matchup defensively versus New England because I don't know that much about the Patriots, honestly, right now. But through the Know Your Foe episodes and as I prepare for the matchup with the matchups episodes, I'll work on things that make sense against this defense and watch more tape of New England during the week.
They look to me, just a quick glance at their stats today that I did, they look like a team that does receiving by committee, even though they've got Diggs. They've got a lot of guys with like 400 yards, 500 yards. They've got their leading rusher is a 700-yard guy. They just look like they're spreading it around, which may be a Josh McDaniels thing.
Could be. Yeah, it could be. Okay, let's get back, talk MVPs for the game. We go 3-2-1. Are you ready with your list?
No, can you go first?
I can go first. I will go with number three is Draymond Jones for me. we talked a little bit about the great game he's had, and the fact that he's number three is remarkable, because typically on any week he'd be number one with the performance he had. Outstanding pass rush. Did some other things well too. He is a designated pass rusher at this point. And I think Tavius is going to help him play more exclusively on pass rush snaps, or a higher percentage of passing downs.
Travis Jones for me.
Okay. So Travis Jones, outstanding pick, by the way. He had a great game, and I had a hard time leaving him out, but I did in the end. And he's on my honorable mention list. My number two guy, or you can go with your number two guy if you want to go next.
No.
Okay. My number two guy is Roquan Smith. Huge game for Roquan. Four drive-ending plays is a lot of high leverage play done. And he set 15 defensive wins the last 2 weeks is an outrageously high total. And he said, I don't know how many drive-ending plays. It might have only been two last week. But to have six drive-ending plays in a two-week period is absurd. So the four is almost the highest of the year. I believe it's been only beaten one time, and that was by Marlon Humphrey last week. He had five.
That's crazy. The idea that this defense is rounding into shape is potentially exciting. It's hard not to cap your enthusiasm about this team. Like, I want to get excited, and I want to protect myself and not get excited. Those two things war with me. I want to pick a player that I don't think maybe is an MVP, but I would like to mention him, and that's Nate Wiggins, who had a tremendous challenge and played capably. You know, he certainly didn't shut Jamar Chase down, but nobody shuts Jamar Chase down. But he made the plays difficult, I think, for the quarterback and the receiver.
Don't have any problem with that selection. I probably wouldn't pick him in this game, but Nate Wiggins has been such a week-to-week performer that I understand completely. He had a missed tackle on the 27-yard play by Chase that cost him some yards, but otherwise I thought he had a pretty darn good game. And again, you're right on the money that he had the toughest assignment out there. My number one guy might be your number one guy. Alohi Gilman is my number one guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so not only he ran the ball back, which was nice. That actually was a small play. I thought the biggest play he had was being on the back end of a bracket where he would have had the interception on the very first overthrow to Chase, went off his fingertips. Instead, it went to Humphrey's hands. Mm-hmm. Good play on a rotating football. Always like to see that and like to see the ball collected. But the fact that if it had been overthrown, Gilman had the perfect loose bracket coverage there to make the play on the ball.
He's been a tremendous addition. I was very suspect of that trade, trading away a pass rusher on a team that has weak pass rush. But I can't say that I think we have to say that it's worked out well.
I will not feel forced to say that because of OA's great sack total. And I don't really believe the people who would say, oh, he'd never have done it here. The scheme doesn't fit or whatever. I don't think they know. I don't really think they know. And the Ravens have been so desperate at outside linebacker to generate pass rush. They traded away their best pass rusher at a time where the situation got even worse the next week. So, yeah. All right. Who's your number one guy?
Oh no, I'm done with two.
You're done with two. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Jim, always great talking football with you.
Pleasure for me. I always love participating here.
Tell people about your love of Maryland basketball, what you'd like to talk about online.
I have a sports-focused Substack called Zip Drive and Dish, which features write-ups of the Ravens' performance in the passing game every week after game, and has write-ups of Maryland basketball games.
All right. Outstanding stuff. If you want to talk Terps basketball, make sure you get Jim's zip code in there in your conversations. You'll get a lot of value and additional thought on Terps basketball and a lot of other topics, but certainly at least the Ravens and Terps basketball. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening as always. If you could do one favor for the show, please tell that next person about it. We're always looking for word of mouth. we're not very algorithm driven here. There's some of that. Maureen's trying to get us in a better position to take advantage of how people look at YouTube videos and getting more people to do that.
I love your video shorts after games and stuff. Those are great.
Enjoy that? Well, yeah, send in a question. Send in a question to hashtag film study mailbag that I can answer with a 1 to 3 minute video, and I'll be happy to do it. I kind of when I was a kid, we watched Saturday morning TV like all kids did. And the things I really loved were the in the news. Do you remember that? I mean, Schoolhouse Rock and all that stuff. That was great too. You know, just a Bill and how that works. But the in the news things were very well done on TV to tell you about current events for children.
In a bite-sized digestible format. Yeah. I'm this close to singing the I'm Just a Bill song, so we better get out.
Get out of here then quickly. Jim, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.